I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Joining me on a Monday, as he does, is Alex Hollings. Alex, I was just talking about writing, as a matter of fact. So, welcome back.
Thanks, man. I'm glad to be here. You know, I'm always happy to talk about writing because as much as I do enjoy journalism, I really got into this game just as a method to get to write for a living. Writing is what I've always wanted to do. Journalism was just kind of the way I got to do it. Does that make sense?
No. Not
you know, journalism is important and valuable, but at the end of the day, I think I would be happier long term as R.L. Stein, just like a crazy dude owning my own farm, writing crappy books, and being a millionaire. That sounds way less stressful than staying up to date with how the world's on fire.
Well,
and
you know
writing
what?
About it every day.
Yeah, no, I and I sympathize with that, but it's a tough gig to pull off. Like on the farm.
Yeah, there's like four people that come.
Yeah, on the farm, millionaire, right? Telling essentially everybody to go to hell and doing your thing.
That's my version of the American dream right there. That's
No, it's good. I was watching some – so I'm in the process of writing a book about post-traumatic winning. And the book of post-traumatic winning. And so a friend of mine's helping me, and I think 75% of it dictated, which would be the rough draft, right? And then he's taking it, and he's refining it and whatnot. So anyway, I was watching some Malcolm Gladwell stuff over the weekend, and he was talking about how he writes. And he said, look, once you get your conclusion firmly in your head, then where to begin it clarifies itself. So I'm curious, when you write, right, what's the process that do you have the conclusion in your head? Is it the issue? You know, you've written both. How is book writing different from, you know, the writing you do, you know, on a weekly basis?
You know, at least for me, I feel like every article kind of is its own beast in a certain way. Like there are some stories that I absolutely start with the conclusion already firmly defined in my head, especially if it's an op-ed, right? Whenever I'm writing an op-ed, I start with what it is that I want to sell people on, and then I kind of backtrack looking for things that can support my assertion, right? Like that's the way you write a persuasive essay. It's not a good way to do science, right? Like if you're a scientist, you need to come up with a very objective, you know, hypothesis and go through it. But when you're writing an op-ed, it's the opposite, right? So if I'm writing an op-ed about why it's important that we take preventative action for COVID-19, right? If I'm writing that op-ed, I start with my assertion that it's important that we all take preventative action to make sure that we mitigate this as much as we can. And then I backtrack and find support from the World Health Organization or the CDC or what have you, so to support my, you know, first assertion. But that's not how I write a lot of things. A lot of times when I'm writing a straight up news story, just an objective coverage of something that happened, as I'm covering it, I'm starting to form positions in my head that I'm trying to keep out of the article. I try really hard to be cognizant both of positions that I have, so that way I can be aware of whether or not I'm trying to force them down someone's throat. But I also try to be aware of logical fallacies that a lot of people accidentally incorporate into their writing. So I try really hard to be aware of my own perspective so that I can keep it out of my writing, I guess.
Wow.
So if I'm writing an objective, you know, piece about this is a thing that Donald Trump said this week, and then offering some analysis as to what the reverberating second and third order effects may be, I start with what he said and I follow that rabbit hole instead of starting with my assertion and going backwards, you know? So some stories, you know, if it's an interview with a person, I always say whenever I'm giving someone advice to get into writing, if you have an interview that you want to do with someone who's really famous, start with the real thing, the real story before you have the interview. Have an angle before you sit down with them. Then ask them three softball questions that get them talking. Then ask the three questions you really need answers to. You shouldn't have more than three or four. And then at the end, ask them two or three more questions that speak directly to whatever it is that they're trying to get exposure for. And that's why they're willing to subject themselves to the press, right? So it should be around 9 or 10 questions, maybe top end 12. But there should really only be three that you need for the meat and potatoes of your story. So, you know, you have to start with the angle if it's an interview. You have to start with an assumption or an assertion if it's an op-ed. And you need to make sure that you're starting with neither if it's like an objective reporting on an event that happened. So I put a lot of thought into the way I present my content to make sure that I'm not doing the reader a disservice. And I think not enough writers do that, but I do think more writers than we tend to realize try to, you know?
Interesting. Interesting. So talk to me about book writing. How's book writing different?
Well, so I've written to date, I've only had one book published, but I've written a novel and a book, right? And those are very different in and of themselves as well. Because a book, when you're writing about a nonfiction topic, my book is called The Perception Wars, How Influence Shapes Conflict. Go check it out on Amazon. But when I'm writing that piece, you know, that's a collection of analytical pieces that I wrote over a span of time. So that was really easy. I just needed to establish a framework. Right. But the overall gist was there, just like I'm writing an op-ed, right? I had my assertion. My assertion is that the media can be manipulated in various ways to shape the way conflict plays out, right? So I already had my assertion. I just needed to go find evidence to support it. And when you're writing a nonfiction book like that or about post-traumatic winning – effectively, you form it not that differently than you would form a persuasive 5-paragraph essay from junior high, right? You know, for anybody who didn't learn it that way, when I was in junior high, we learned the 5-paragraph persuasive essay, which is an introductory paragraph that includes three sentences that are previews for the supporting paragraphs you'll have to come. So the introductory paragraph's 5 sentences that are modeled after the 5 paragraphs. You have an introduction, 3 supporting facts and a conclusion. Then your next paragraph is drawing out one of those supporting sentences. The second one is drawing out the second one. The third one's drawing out the third one.
Right.
And the 5th paragraph is a conclusion that effectively sums up the rest. So it looks a lot like your introduction, right? The conclusion and introduction should effectively mirror one another in that format, right? The introduction says, this is what I'm going to tell you. The conclusion says, these are the things I told you, right? But if you're writing a story, if you're writing a fictional novel, you have to go way different than that. And Luke Ryan, who's a former Army Ranger, he writes for Coffee or Die as an associate editor. He also does some writing for us at Sandbox. He's got a series called The Last Marauder. That's a post-apocalyptic fiction series. And he and I talked a bit as he was forming it, because we have very similar approaches to writing fiction, which is I use index cards and a pin board. So I take the various story elements and I put them on the pin board in order and try to make sure that it makes sense. My rough drafts exist like that. I don't do any writing in a fictional sense until well after I already have the entire story mapped on a pin board. And Luke does it very similarly. He uses index cards. Sometimes he uses them on the table as opposed to a pin board. But it's the same basic idea. You take all the ingredients to your story, you lay them out in front of you, and then you look for problems with that. You look for holes that your story either has or that you've created, and you try to resolve those before you even start writing. So, like, the thing that most people tend to skip is the outlining stage. The outlining stage, in my opinion, is like the whole thing. The rest of it's superfluous.
Right.
You know?
Right. All right, let's talk current events. And I want to kind of link it back to the media. The hysteria that surrounds coronavirus, and I would put reporting in quotation marks, because it seems to me to look a lot like First of all, you can't read any article without, it seems like, without the president of the United States, this is his fault, you know. And so you and I have talked before on essentially the need for websites to traffic in, you know, Liz Hurley bikini pictures because
– and sensationalism, absolutely.
Right, because those numbers are no joke when you're doing this for a living and you're trying to substantiate rates and you're trying to make money as you do it.
In a real way, the money that a company makes, a publication, a news outlet makes, is tied directly to people engaging with it. If people don't engage with the content, Breitbart goes away. If people don't engage with the content, BuzzFeed goes away. The reason why these websites still exist are because people do engage with the content, right? So sensationalism sells because the more worried you are when you read a headline, the more likely you are to click on it. Worry and fear and anger are the greatest motivators in this line of work, right? And this is the challenge we face at Sandbox with trying to be a non-sensational, apolitical, and positive outlet, is that the best way to get a story to go viral is to make it really piss someone off or really scare a lot of people. Those are the stories that do really, really well. I would argue a close third is nudity, right? If you can show somebody some boobs, get them furious, or get them really scared, you've got the recipe for a viral story there. And really, some outlets trade on the shotgun method with sensationalism, which is – it's really difficult to predict. I would argue that no one can effectively predict what stories or what content will go viral, right? But some outlets model all content after the viral strategy with the assumption that 1 out of 10, 1 out of 20 will get a great reach because it'll be that upsetting and that many people will share it. And the rest of their content is paid for through that 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 20 that kind of gets a lot of traction under it because – it effectively engaged the lizard parts of our brain, right? However, with all that said, I have a big issue with both sides of the coronavirus debate in the media right now. I think that Donald Trump in particular, not necessarily his administration, but he as an individual has made things more dangerous through his lack of information about this, but eagerness to talk about it in the press. But I also think that the press has exacerbated that by framing everything as the world is going to end and it's Donald Trump's fault. There's a place somewhere in the middle where we ought to be, and we're not, right? We should hold, we should speak truth to power in all its various forms. We should hold the president accountable for occasionally saying that the coronavirus concern is fake news and a liberal hoax, because it's obviously not. I would argue that the people whose family members have already died would say this was not invented by Democrats to hurt Donald Trump. My grandma died, right? However, there's some truth to what Trump is saying in that the media really is framing this as though it's all Trump's fault, even though he may have been doing some things poorly. So again, the truth tends to fall somewhere in between, right?
But I would tell you that, and again, I'm not his biggest supporter. And I'm not his biggest critic. I would say this because he's certainly a mixed bag. No matter how you, if you're a supporter, he's a mixed bag. But I mean, look, there's state health departments, right? There's the CDC. There's all kinds of people that are layers and layers of this shit that are between right the flash and the boom, right? And the president is kind of the cherry on top. He's a generalist who runs a government, but I mean. And so to me, he's, you know, so what is his job, right?
He needs to protect the economy, and he's trying to do that.
That's part of it, right? He needs to be honest with the American people, which he struggles with embellishing. And what he's trying to say is, look, you know, influenza has killed how many people this winter, right? Let's put this in context. But you cannot do that. And so to me, what I find extremely frustrating is the truth seems to be in short supply, and the articles.
I have a counterpoint to that influence.
Let me just finish one. And the stories that I tend to seize on, you know, and read is I had coronavirus and this is how it impacted me. So ultimately what you get to is if you're elderly and you're not in good health, you're at risk and you should self-isolate. Okay. And then there's other permutations of that in terms of how you should go about living your life, because we've lived through these things, right? We've lived through these things. And one of the funny things that I learned when I got elected, I served on the public health commission. And so you get to talking about flu shots. And so you're listening. And so all of a sudden somebody says, well, what strain of flu are we, inoculating?
Are we inoculating ourselves against?
Yeah. And they'll say, well, it's this. Well, what's the strain that's going around? Yeah, well, it's that. And then me, stupid, says, okay, well, that, take care of that. And they look at you and they say, no. And then I say, well, I don't understand. I thought this was the flu shot. Well, there's all these different forms of the flu. And what we try to do is we try to predict, right?
Which ones will be the biggest issue, absolutely.
Which one will be the biggest issue? And that's the vaccination we use. And I said, what? And they were like, yeah, that's how it works. So it's an imperfect science, right? It's an estimation on their part, and then we can only produce so much vaccine, and then we produce that, and then we service the economy with that. So to me, the story has, so much more. These stories have so much more to them when you talk about public health. But that's not what I see. What I see is porn.
I'm with you. To an extent. See, because my concern here is that we are now taking whataboutism into the biological front, right? We're now saying, well, hey, look, this other thing is worse, so let's not worry about this.
No.
I'm not saying that's your argument, but that's over on social media. Right,
I would say that's you're overstating it. Put it in context. Is it serious? Yes.
But I will tell you why putting it in context is a problem with the American people. Right now, for the past 2 days, my family has been in self-isolation because last week I was speaking on a college campus and somebody who had recently come back from Italy didn't take any precautions because they felt as though they were fine. And now there is one person in the hospital on the campus that I was just on. With a confirmed case of COVID-19. And who knows how many more of us were in that room with him that may now have it. Am I going to be fine? Probably. And let's assume I was exposed directly and I do have it now. My wife and daughter were also in the room and we're probably all going to be fine. But my mom is a 65-year-old lady that works in a nursing home. So if I do not take the proactive, responsible measure of saying, hey, mom, I think that we shouldn't hang out for a few weeks, and I'm going to spend as much time at home as I can until I'm sure that I'm not carrying this, because I could be the reason someone else's mom dies. I'm probably going to be okay. My daughter's probably going to be okay. My wife is probably going to be okay even if we all were exposed. But my mom might not be. And the fact of the matter is that Americans by and large have a don't tell me what to do mentality. So this person who knew full well that their spouse had just come back from Italy, where there was a large number of infected people in the city that they were in, decided to come to a public event and sit down at a table right next to me, not right next to me, but pretty close by, in a room full of students and educators from various schools throughout the community, 10 different schools. Throughout the community. That's a really irresponsible thing to do. Not that, again, all of those students and teachers are now necessarily in direct risk, though a certain percentage of them might be. They might have underlying health issues. But my mom's at risk now. And the 200 old people at the nursing home my mom works at are at risk now because someone did not think that this was a very big deal. This is the issue I have with our putting things in context and saying the flu is way more dangerous. The flu may well be way more dangerous, but that doesn't mean that we should ignore the danger that's present.
Yeah, but to me, you're guilty of that, which you're accusing others of. So when I say put it in context, nobody said the word ignore.
No, nobody said the word ignore, but that is exact. I got into an argument on Facebook yesterday with a reader that has supported my work for a long time, but who is convinced that this entire thing is specifically to hurt Trump's chances at being reelected.
Well, that's when you wrestle with the pig, right?
Yeah, but see, this is the problem. You do the same thing that I do, which is you project your common sense onto the average person, which is not necessarily present. A lot of people see things as black or white instead of the shades of gray that the world actually operates in. And there's a lot of people
I agree.
Think that this
so to me, what you need
so
is
blown out of proportion that
right,
we don't need
what
to worry
you need
about
though
it.
Is you need honest reporting. Right about
absolutely.
This thing
that is what you need
that gives you the appropriate steps to take. But so much of what I see is the whole blame somebody, either the officials in the state of Washington didn't react quick enough, right? Or you know, and even though they took the same precautions as 75% of the other governors that took, so they're under the bell curve in terms of what most states did right now. So to me, I don't see
any way in our modern media circle to get away from placing blame, because that is what the American people want. The American people want to fault somebody for everything. I don't just mean for this. I mean in general, we're less concerned with making things better and more concerned with who to fault all the time.
And I don't have a problem with that. But to me, I mean, if you look at news aggregators and you start just going down a page of headlines.
Well, and that is the way most people get the news.
Most, just by
going down a page of headlines.
Right. Most of it is hysterical.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. I'm not defending the way that the media is presenting this in any way, but I am concerned about the way that the American people have once again managed to divide an issue down party lines.
Oh, that's my point. It's like, look, can we get to the truth about this shit without
that's a fair question to ask, not just the media, though. That's a fair question to ask the administration. The media and the administration are both doing the exact same thing on opposite ends of the spectrum. Donald Trump is trying to make sure that the American economy doesn't collapse in the midst of all this hysteria, right? Which is a very important thing to do.
And which is what presidents have done whenever this has happened.
The problem is that he's just he's a poor deliverer of these messages. So he's not having a very positive effect. Now, on the other side of the spectrum.
Okay, let me ask you this. What
did I want to hear Trump say?
No,
I can tell you.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that there's a word that can come out of his mouth
that wouldn't be attacked. You're
exactly
right.
Exactly. And that's
but
to me.
Donald Trump came out and said, you know, in December, when we should have been doing stuff about this already, when we already should have been talking to 3M about increasing the number of N95 masks that were in production, when we should have already been taking proactive steps, but we didn't, right? What he should have been saying in December, when someone said, hey, are you concerned about this COVID-19 coronavirus thing? He should have said, hell yeah, of course we're concerned, but we've got the best infrastructure in the world. We have the best researchers and scientists in the world, and we're on top of it. We're worried, but we're prepared. And instead, he said fake news, right? That hurt our ability to prepare. However, the media said, look at Donald Trump. He's a monster. He's going to kill us all. That also hurt our ability to prepare. But I'm not going to only hold one of these two accountable and pretend the other one's fine. The media is doing a poor job.
Yeah, but Alex, I mean, it's not like anybody's come out and said, hey, we went to the president and we laid this thing out for him. And he said, yeah, fake news. Screw it. It's not like anybody said that. And so you're saying from your perspective, you believe that the United States should have took concrete action in December. But there's no indication that the people that advised the president of the United States went to him, said those things, and he said, no, screw it. I don't want to do that.
You are trying to blame the Lance Corporal for the CO's decision then. This is what you're doing.
No,
right now.
I'm just saying garbage.
Nobody told the guy in charge to be proactive, so it's not his fault.
He's not an expert in public health. And
if
so
you were the president of the United States and there was a concern about this, would you not say, get me some people to talk to me about this?
No, I have people that are supposed to watch this shit that when it does break squelch, they come to me.
This is the glaring difference between an enlisted perspective and a commissioned one, where as an officer, it's my team's fault for not telling me. as an adult.
Well, how can I do something about it if I don't know? It's like a child. It's like a child. Well, if you're in charge of more than one
thing. You're telling me that in December, Donald Trump did not know about the coronavirus.
Donald Trump's got a whole department of people that are paid to do that.
And we shouldn't hold anyone accountable because we're not.
No, but I'm saying that if you're going to look at the decision and you're going to critique it in an intelligent way, I think, right? 101.
It would be a failure
I think
of
101 is what did he know and when did he know about it? Right? That's to me, and I don't care what you're talking about. I don't care if you're talking about military.
I agree with
military
you.
Battles in history.
I think that we could absolutely be sure that Donald Trump knew about the coronavirus in December.
And then you would be writing a unique story because nobody else has written that story. So you should get on that shit.
That's not true at all.
If you want to get something to go viral, I think you've got your headline.
But this is what I'm saying is that we in the media, I know that we're the boogeyman, but we've been talking about this since December. So I don't know how you could assume that public officials didn't know about it.
Assume they did and assume that their
assume
advice
they did and chose to wait 2 months is a problem.
Okay. But again, if that's the best advice that I'm getting from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and I'm the president of the United States and he's my guy.
I understand that you're trying to defuse the responsibility so much that
people are culpable for their actions. No, the people, if you show me when does this hit its quote unquote tipping point, right? And then
we do not wait for a tipping point to take proactive measures. That is the point of proactive measures.
So when you could show me this is aiming towards a tipping point, right? But to me, what this is, it's classic second guessing. Now in hindsight, you're taking A plus L plus Z and you're adding them together and you say, see, he should have fucking done it.
I'm going to tell you, the Pentagon, the Defense Department, has been taking proactive measures against this since December. The Defense Department. So if the Defense Department has been able to take proactive measures since December, which I do think have paid off quite a bit because up until like 4 days ago, the number of U.S. personnel, military personnel that were infected was at 1. Now it's at, I think, 5. That is really, really good considering the size of our footprint and the exposure of American service members to other populaces. That's really good. That's effective preventative measures that were started in December.
Why?
Because they were looking at what was going on and taking proactive steps.
Did they take them everywhere or did they take them regionally?
I'd have to go through and look at every regional command, but I do know.
Then you should do that. All right. And what other country took strong proactive measures that the United States didn't?
There are a number of countries that have taken, especially small ones, like in Southeast Asia. There are some countries that will literally not let anyone into their nation that's been in a country or is coming from a country that has at least one confirmed case. I'm not saying that's how strict we need to get as the United States, but I am saying that right now,
what other major developed country took steps that we didn't take? And the answer is there is none.
But this is what I'm saying to you, Mac, is why are we measuring everything based on whether or not we're as bad as others instead of how effective our actions actually are?
Because this is to
why
me,
on earth would
this
we
is to me classic second guessing of people, right? That add A, L, and Z.
That was modeled after Sweden, you'd call me a socialist. But if you tell me that we should model our health efforts after Sweden, that's supposed to be an argument that I can sustain. We do not model ourselves after European nations. We do not follow other countries' lead. We're the United States of America. We're supposed to be leaders. We're supposed to take proactive measures. We're supposed to have the resources and the infrastructure available to work on mitigating this to the best that we can. We're not doing a great job right now because testing is still limited, masks are still limited, medical supplies are still limited, because we're slow on the ball here. And when you tell me that it's okay that we're slow on the ball because other countries were too, that sounds like an excuse, not an answer.
I can understand why you're saying that because when you're adding A, L, and Z together, of course it would seem like that. Okay,
so what you're telling me,
no, what you're telling me is that you have the answer, that you had the answer in December.
No, I'm
right. Then
you
if that's the case, you need to get into public health business because you saw something that none of these other major developed nations saw. Because none of them took the same – the action that you said is absolutely obvious and should have been taken.
Well, so I understand what you're saying.
Get your resume ready.
You're misquoting me, which makes you a bad journalist. What I'm saying is that portions of the American defense infrastructure were already taking proactive steps in December. According to you, Donald Trump had never heard of coronavirus in December.
You're misquoting
you,
I never said that.
Do as much as
I never
Norway.
Said that. I never said that. When you sit around, right, when you sit around with people that have portfolios underneath you, okay, and you look at them and you say, okay, where is this and what are we doing with it, all right? Well, this is here and this is what we're monitoring and these are the precautions we're prepared to take, blah, blah, but it hasn't reached this, so we're not prepared to do that. Okay. If he's or she is my person, that's how that shit goes.
You, as the CEO, are still held accountable for the decision that you made, despite the advisors.
That's right. And so what you're doing is you're, again, A plus L plus Z equals this. No other developed nation took the actions that you're talking about, and that's why you need to get your resume ready and get in the public health business.
But what I'm saying is that the Defense Department took the actions that I recommended
3 months
ago.
Regionally, they began.
Oh, so the regional commanders, they don't count.
No, but if you're in proximity,
they have the same access to the internet. You're right. The president of the United States has less information at his fingertips than the CENTCOM commander, right?
No, but what you're talking about, well, there's small nations in Southeast Asia.
No,
that
you
did
asked
this.
Me what nations had taken more action than we had, and
right.
I told you many. And then you said, okay, but what's big ones?
Yeah, what developed nations have?
And I said, why is it that we're gauging our success off of how effective France was? Or how effective the UK was? Why is America only expected to do as much as other nations that are doing poorly?
And again, this is part of the whole second guessing thing. Oh,
this isn't second guessing. This
oh, it
is.
It absolutely is.
Guessing.
Oh, Nambia
right
shut down their one flight a week from China. So we should have followed Nambia. That's what you're suggesting.
There were Republican and Democrat lawmakers calling for shutdowns, calling for a shutdown. And all travel to China by the end of December.
Did Barack Obama, when we went through this before in 2009, did he ever shut down? Right? Did he ever shut down travel to Asia?
So you're again whataboutisming here? You're again going to say there was a viral outbreak before? What about that?
Yeah, I'm. Gonna,
so we,
if
so
you look down the if you go
the
down
Americans
and say
that died
what
this
did
week,
what
we should,
did
we should
what
measure
did,
them
what did previous administration what did previous administrations do and when did they do
again,
it?
Again, I don't understand this idea that we're only supposed to do as much as other people have instead of we should do as much as we should do.
No, I know, but that's always the lament of the second guesser.
You're giving me a bunch of officer excuses
in the rearview mirror.
You're telling me that you deserve your star.
In the rearview mirror, it all makes sense.
It was my advisor.
In the rearview mirror, it all makes sense.
Okay, so here's my question to you. What is it that you think we did so effectively so far?
I don't. I think this is
so
a
you don't think that we've done as been
I
effective,
don't,
but you
no,
also
my
think
point,
that everyone
my
did
point
the right
is thing. My point is this. when you're
you
at the
totally
top,
you just skipped my question.
I
my
think,
question to you is what is it that we're doing well?
Well, I don't know. I can't. How do you judge that?
How do you judge that? You judge that based
by
on
what?
How quickly this is spreading, based on how effectively we can test for it, based on the number of people who are infected versus the number of people who are dying, and we're going to determine an average lethality rate based on that. There's a lot of things that we can and should be doing and are doing. We really are doing lots of things.
And I think
what I'm asking
and I
you,
think,
though,
I think all
so convinced
I think,
that there's nothing else Donald
I think,
Trump and the administration
no, that's
could
not,
have done.
That's not true. Can, you keep
okay,
you
so
keep oversimplifying. What I'm saying is this is a dynamic, right? This is a dynamic event that is unfolding around the world. And it's
okay,
happened
so,
and
so
it's,
there's no time
and,
for after action reports.
And it's happened before. Okay?
It has happened before.
We've gone through a lot of times.
Like the flu in 1918 that killed what 7% of the population.
We've gone through this before. Okay,
and we will again, but we should be better at it every time.
And that's okay. I don't disagree with you. But here's my problem: the whole criticism is filtered by either the love or the hate of Donald Trump.
Is that what you're saying? My criticism is being filtered.
It sounds like that. And I don't know if you're a Donald Trump hater or not. I don't know that we ever had that conversation. I think you're somewhere in the middle.
I think Donald Trump is a bad salesman for some good policy. He's had a lot of good policy programs, but he's a really bad salesman of all of them.
I just don't. And this is having another one. Having been right, having spent a decent part of my life, right, watching dynamic decision making, things that you control a part of, right? It's not easy.
I agree with that, but I'm disconcerted by how happy you are to blame your advisors for your command decisions.
No, I'm not blaming them, because what you're implying is that they had information that they, as professionals who've spent their whole life in this endeavor, looked at and either misinterpreted or ignored. That's what you're submitting to me.
No, what I'm submitting to you is that I think the choices that were being made were as economically and politically motivated as they were about health.
I think that
that's what I'm saying.
I think that the people at CDC and the people and the people and the people
really not a good argument.
And the people that are that advise the president at the cabinet level, right? I'm saying that as this thing evolved and they brought information to the highest levels of our government, right?
You were assuming that they did a real good job. That's what you're saying, is that I don't know what they were told or when they were told, but I assume they did a bang-up job whenever it was.
That's my assumption.
And my assumption is that the minute that it looked like this could be a big issue for the United States, we should have taken proactive steps so that Donald Trump could have gone on TV and said, yeah, we're worried, but these are all the things that we've already done. And then we wouldn't have had three times that I can think of in the past week that the stock market plunged by 1,000 points. Because if we as a country thought that maybe we were being proactive here, people would be less worried about how negatively affected their stocks are going to be.
You know,
and then
again,
they wouldn't be in such a hurry to dump their stocks.
I think your argument would have more validity if we were slower than most developed nations reacting to this.
You know, right? I think that your argument would have more validity if Americans weren't already dead.
Oh, no, and that's an easy thing to say.
That is
the Chicken Little rearview mirror thing to say.
No, you know what it is?
But it's hard.
You're looking at everything from how well we can defend a fit rep, and I'm looking at it from how many American lives we're going to end up losing. I don't really give a shit.
No, I'm looking at it through the lens of somebody, right, who taught decision making in real time.
Yes, okay. And I'm looking at it through the lens of another Marine who's aware of decision making in real time too, and is allowed to say when I think those decisions weren't good.
Oh no, and that's fine. But
what you're saying is that you assume that they did the best they could with the information at hand, even though I don't know when they got it or what they got. And now the media is going on a hatchet job because obviously they're wrong, because obviously the decision makers did the best that they could.
No, what I'm saying is I don't know when they knew or what they do.
But you're willing to establish a position on the assumption that it was late and not much.
What I'm willing to say is the United States didn't respond much differently than the other major industrial nations of the world.
You're right, and there's a reason why this is still a problem.
Of the world responded. So what you're submitting to me is nobody in the world had a clue about any of this. And they were all wrong.
No, that's literally what you're submitting to me, is that the Trump administration had no clue about this in December, which is not true. What I'm submitting to you is that just because America didn't do more than Japan doesn't mean that what we did was the best we could.
I don't disagree with you about that.
So I don't disagree with your position at all, because your position is that we can't judge the decision makers, because that's you know, Monday quarterbacking. If we ever judge the decisions that were made, we can't do that because you know what it's like to be a decision maker. And now we should really judge our performance on other countries who are also still struggling with this issue, when this issue is obviously still not over. It's going to continue to be an issue for months, maybe even years forward. And if you're already willing to suggest that what we did was the right thing based on what we knew, even though you don't know what we knew or when we knew it, that's a pretty big assertion to make when we don't know how good or bad this is going to end up.
But it's the same assertion you're making. It's just, you don't know
the assertion that I'm making.
You don't know any. You don't know any of those things. And what you're saying is, I don't know any of those things either. But I'm saying it's bad. So you're criticizing me for saying
Donald Trump.
I would withhold.
What I am saying is that we've done.
I would withhold judgment and wait till I got those facts.
You are withholding judgment. You're arguing the other side.
No, I'm just saying.
You are withholding judgment.
I'm just saying that, yeah, based on what I don't know if any of the industrial nations did anything wrong. Okay? And what you're saying is, based on these, and you'll call
based
them.
On, based you, on you'll, the fact that the virus is continuing to spread,
you'll,
that means
you'll
that
call
done
them,
a poor job.
You'll call them facts, and that all the public health departments around the world failed. But you saw it clearly. I just find, Alex, that when somebody takes that position, it tends to be wrong. And when you get in a room where people sit down and they lay out, well, this is what we knew. This is when we knew it. This is what we advise. You say, okay, I got it. This is all based on history of the other, you know, coronaviruses that have happened. And so to me, then what happens
here's
is –
here's my question to you, because I looked it up, and on January 8th, the American CDC was already publishing health advisories about this. By January 8th, the American CDC was already advising the public about this. So you're telling me that the American people found out about this from the CDC before the administration did?
No. Who do you think this
– Who do you think the CDC reports to, right?
Right.
So what I'm saying is that we should have been – taking proactive steps ahead of time.
They were. Those were the proactive steps, though.
We didn't pass funding for this effort until last week.
So everybody in Congress is asleep at the switch, too.
What I'm saying is that, yeah, as a Republican and Democrat-run government, we've done a shit-poor job of this. We are not doing a good job of mitigating the economic ramifications. We are not doing a good job of mitigating the social ramifications. And we're certainly not doing a good job of mitigating the virus's spread.
Here's what I would say. Here's what I would be critical of. What I would say is, if this somehow or other didn't break squelch quick enough for the public health departments of the major developed nations around the world to take action,
then we shouldn't blame anyone.
Then why? No. Then why didn't it? Why?
My question would be,
why didn't this? And again,
big part of why it didn't move as fast as it could is because of the Chinese government. I think we can both agree on that.
Yeah.
The Chinese government did a really piss poor job of communicating with the world about the severity of this.
Well, and there's if you read some of the writing that's coming out of China, they will tell you that they deceived for a lot of different reasons.
Yesterday they started a new PR propaganda campaign aimed at re-educating the Chinese populace, A, to show them how effectively President Xi has mitigated this, and B, to try to convince the Chinese people that this virus originated outside of Chinese borders and was intentionally introduced to their people.
Of course it was.
Which, to be honest, echoes a lot of the conspiracy theories I've heard in the United States from a lot of these people.
Right. Well, let's not go there, okay? We're having a perfectly fine argument here.
Let's not corrupt it with what the real American people are talking about. What I'm saying to you is that
we can talk about the World Wrestling extravaganza too if we want to go there, and you know how this
they're
was
voters, man. You like, how this can't
was
ignore them.
How this was introduced.
This is what I'm saying to you is that. Just because other countries are doing a shitty job doesn't mean it's okay for us to do a shitty job.
And again, I think you're too quick to that point. My point is
not doing a bad job. Do you think we're doing a good job right now with it?
you know what? I don't know enough about the history of how we reacted and when we reacted.
But we don't need to. You don't hold need on, to hold know on, what hold we on, did hold last on,
hold on, hold on, hold on. Let me finish. I don't know enough about how we reacted, when we reacted, and the protocols that the Department of Health has in place, right, for things like this.
Then because, let me just ask you this objection.
So let me finish. So if when this gets laid on the table and they say, okay, here's the model that we have for this based on these outbreaks in this year, and this is how we track this shit. Okay. Based on this model, right, we did not reach this point until this date, which is at that point we gave this advice, and the president ignored it, then he wears it. He owns it. Right?
I'm going to give you a really good example of why that doesn't work. You cannot base your responses to a 2019-2020 viral epidemic on the 1918 Spanish flu because we live in a different world than we did then.
I'm not.
You can't even base it on a 2003 SARS outbreak because we live in a different world now than we did then too. And if at the end of all of this,
I disagree with what you just said.
If we can inoculate the entire American public in 6 months, right, which would be great and is unlikely. But let's just say 6 months from now, we can inoculate the entire American public, and this is entirely in our rearview mirror. If when those guys, those advisors that are talking to Donald Trump, that we're going to diffuse his responsibility down to them. Let's say those guys come to you with their fit rep and they go, yeah, but see, we notified the president by this many days after we found out. And when it happened with the Spanish flu and with SARS and with MERS, that was all fine. So even though 20,000 Americans died as a result of us waiting, we actually still beat the model by a day. So if we beat the model by a day, so really I deserve a promotion, even though 20,000 Americans died. That's why I have a question as to how it is exactly that we're judging our success based on previous models rather than based on actual outcome in real life.
So the actual outcome in real life is that every life is precious, right?
Well, the actual outcome in real life is that there's going to be a lot of Americans.
So that every one of this, so that history and trends don't apply, that the only thing that matters is every
decisions.
Every example that we're going to go down is an absolutely new example, and it's got its own nuances.
You should use the previous models to inform your decisions, but you should not base your success on whether or not you're keeping old schedules. You should base your success on outcome. And the outcome can either be the rapid transmission and spread of this virus or the quarantine and effective containment of it. The outcome is going to be how many of our mothers and grandmothers died.
How do you judge that? You don't judge it by SARS and MERS?
You certainly use that to inform it, but no, you judge your performance on how things are going.
So if somebody died, then I failed?
No, but if lots of people died, then probably.
Well, then what yardstick do you use? I think you use the historical one, right?
I understand that you really want to make this a fit rep, Mac, but this isn't a fit rep. This is real life and people are dying. You use your performance.
No, you sound like Chicken Little, and these things happen, right? And how do you mitigate? How do you deal with this in a population of 327 million people?
I'll tell you how. You start. You start as soon as you find out that it could be an issue. You go and talk to suppliers like 3M. Before this has already been a global issue for 9 weeks. You start by already getting the ball rolling on funding for prevention efforts before there's already hundreds of people potentially infected in the United States. You start by having tests available as soon as positives start popping up in our country. Up until recently, only 7 buildings in the United States could even test for this. Tell me that is not piss poor.
All of this is to me rearview mirror. Obviously, the infrastructure isn't there to deal with this. No, I understand that.
The infrastructure isn't there. We're doing this wrong.
I think what you have to do is you have to go footnote all of that. Why wasn't the infrastructure there?
I am not worried about the footnotes, Mac. I'm really not worried about how the history books will record our baby boomers all dying. I'm not that worried about that shit. What I am worried about is the baby boomers all dying. That's what I'm worried about. I don't really care.
But how did – let me just say, you put yourself in a position – to say,
as an outside observer,
you're saying is I know more about this and what should have been done than all these people in all these industrial nations. That's what you're saying. You're saying we fucked it up, and all these people who get paid, who spent careers doing this, who have PhDs, all these people that fucked it up, I know more than they do. I'm just saying I would slow my roll on that.
I know that you're defending the leadership position, and I can respect that. But no, I never once said that I knew more than the CDC. The CDC obviously knew this was a big deal before January 8th when they started putting out advisories.
But
the CDC obviously knew this was a big issue. The Pentagon obviously knew that this was a big issue.
But
I guarantee you there were people throughout the chain of command that said, hey, this is pretty serious. We should really worry about this. But you're telling me that even though you don't know what any of them said, you assume that I said that I'm smarter than every level of that.
Yes.
In reality, all I said was, we've known about this since December. We're only now starting to really hit the throttle on preparation. And because of that, there's a good chance that this is going to be significantly worse than it could have been if we weren't just trying to follow the previous model and ensure our promotion. If we were looking at this from a perspective of what can we do to mitigate the threat that this presents to the American people, instead of what can we do to protect our own promotions and careers, then we're gauging this in a very different metric. You're worried about who is to blame. I'm worried about what it is that we're doing. I understand that you want to say that nobody in the administration
you don't.
Is to blame.
What you don't.
That's fine.
What you
somebody somewhere is doing a poor job.
What you understand is your perspective – and that you've decided, right, that the wrong course of action was taken.
I didn't say the wrong course of action was taken. I said we did it too late. We did it later than we should have.
That the wrong course of action was taken last December. Okay,
I would agree with that.
Okay, so what I'm saying is
without knowing what was said or what they knew, you agree with that.
So what I'm saying is that when you put yourself in that position. My experience in my life is without those footnotes, right? I don't put myself in that position.
So let me finish.
So what I've learned in my life is not to assume that those people are stupid or that they're selfish, right? Or they don't care about the American people. That's what I've learned, and that's what
I might not be stupid, selfish, maybe selfish at times.
I might not be articulating that well, but that's what I'm saying.
When the Fitzgerald and the Nimitz, not the Nimitz, I'm sorry, the Fitzgerald and the McCain were in terrible crashes that killed sailors,
Yes. You
were very vocal about the bad decisions that were made at the command level and the bad decisions that were made by Big Navy as a whole that led to this. I'm using that exact same logic to talk about a nationwide issue, and you're telling me that we can't hold leadership accountable because we don't know what they knew.
No, I'm telling you, there's an appropriate time to hold them accountable.
You think that now is too early for me to say, hey, we're doing a bad job? We should wait until after to start being critical?
Well, you can be critical all you want, right?
It doesn't seem to me like you're very accepting of me being critical here, Mac.
I don't know. I don't agree with your criticism.
I think
there's criticism.
Based on the idea that these leaders did the best they could as far as we know.
Based on the fact that I don't have the footnotes in front of me to make the judgment that you're trying to make. Here's the substance.
No, what I'm saying is this could have been perfectly by the numbers. We could have had a turnover binder that told us exactly what to do, and we could have followed that step by step.
Okay, so why, Alex, we're still
doing a bad job.
Why didn't they? If you assume they're not stupid, if you assume that they care about the American people and their profession, why didn't they? He's not online. What happened? He just got a new computer. The Well, I hate to end like that. Oh, hold on. What happened?
Through this.
What's that?
Can you hear me?
It sounds like you're talking through a tomato can and a soup, tomato can with a string on it.
I'm actually talking to you through this stupid Alexa thing because my internet went down and my computer doesn't recognize it as back up yet, but Alexa does.
All right. So my question to you was, what would have been the motivation for people that have spent their whole life doing this to not react the way that you think they should have reacted?
Well, I think that there's a lot of different variables in play here, but one of them may well be that they were following standard protocol. That doesn't mean that we should stick with that standard protocol. It means that protocol's wrong.
I agree. I don't disagree.
Another thing that I would argue has motivated Donald Trump's public statements is trying to protect our economy so that when this all blows over, we're not in the midst of a new depression. However, I think that Donald Trump has done a pretty poor job of communicating effectively when it comes to that. So I think that there were more than one thing at play here. I think that we did a bad job of recognizing how severe this could be. I think that we did a bad job of either sticking to previous SOPs that were established based on different viral or bacterial infections instead of acknowledging how much more susceptible people are to transmission when it comes to this virus. I also think that Donald Trump's efforts to protect the economy have instead had a negative reaction through a lot of Trump supporters who are now seeing anything that suggests that you should be careful or wash your hands or worried about your mom and dad getting infected. They're seeing all that as fake news because of the presentation that this is being used to hurt Donald Trump's presidency in conservative media. I think liberal media is trying to use it to hurt Donald Trump's presidency, and that's a bad thing too. But just because two things are bad doesn't mean they cancel each other out. It still means that we have to shine a light on what we think is going wrong.
I agree.
And I think that Donald Trump is trying to protect the economy, which is the right move.
Well, I think that's historically the president's role in all this, right? So when we sit there and say, okay, what do you do? Okay, my job is I go out there. And look, he's a germaphobe, right? He got off Air Force One today. Imagine this. He gets off Air Force One today in Tampa, and he's walking to the limo, and there's people at wherever he landed, and they're at this fence. And now, do you think Trump wants to go shake hands with people?
Well, of course not.
No, he doesn't. And so he goes over. He doesn't talk to the media, which he does all the time, right? And he goes and he shakes hands at this fence. Now, how much do you think he wants to do that? None, right? Zero. I don't want to do that. But, I mean, that's his – historically, when these things happen.
Well, I mean, let's
– you know, get back,
exactly
on the, get back on the airplanes. Go back to work, right? I mean, that's
– let's call it what it is. We face a bigger threat. If the American economy really suffers as a result of this, that'll hurt or kill more people than the coronavirus will.
Oh.
Is that fair to say?
I don't know about kill.
If the world economy tanks and the American economy tanks and we find ourselves in a new depression, worst case scenario, right? That will be a further reaching issue than the coronavirus. And I think Donald Trump is right to try to stave off the economic fallout of the loss in production, of the loss in international trade, and of the loss of just the loss of work hours being put in across the United States, right? We're talking about billions of dollars being lost, potentially trillions of dollars being lost in the coming months, just over things like people being told to stay home if they think they're sick to be safe, right? We're losing a lot of money, and it's absolutely essential that the president is out there saying, we're doing our best. Things are good. The outlook is good. Keep spending your money, because if people stop spending their money or if people start offloading all their stocks because they're afraid that they'll be worthless soon, our economy ends up in shambles, even if the coronavirus outbreak ends up not being that big of a deal. So Donald Trump is 100% right to be trying to mitigate the economic fallout of this situation. I think he's doing a bad job of it, but I think he's in the right state of mind. Right.
Well, you might be the first person that's ever
his approach to this.
You might be the first person that's ever
critical of anyone who says that we got here by following SOP because it's how we've done it before has never been a good reason to do it now. I'm going to be critical of every step along the way until we're clear of this, because if we can be doing a better job, we should be doing a better job. And as a member of the media, it is irresponsible to say, I think everything is probably going to go great. I think everything probably already went well. Don't sweat it. As a member of the media, my job is to inform the public of what I think are serious things. And I do think that there's a good chance that America is going to suffer some real repercussions from this virus, even if they're not deaths, right? If thousands of Americans suddenly get sick, that's going to really hurt our economy. That's going to hurt our infrastructure. So we should do everything we can to prevent that from happening. I don't think that we've done a good job of that so far, and I'm going to stay critical until I feel as though we're on top of this. And I think it's not a good position to take where I just assume every decision that was made was a good one because I'm not the leader making the decision and I don't know what his advisors told him. We should be critical. We should speak truth to power all the time, not just when we're worried about a viral outbreak. And that's what I'm doing now, is I'm being critical and I'm speaking truth to power. And I'm saying, I think that we could have done a better job of this. I think we still can be doing a better job of this. And I think going out publicly as a prominent person within either Trump's administration or anyone else's and saying this isn't a serious issue, I think that's disingenuous and I think it's politically motivated. I think instead we should be saying this is serious, but we're ready. This is serious, but this is what you can do today. Instead of saying this isn't that serious, it's at 15 infected right now. It'll probably be zero really soon. That's what I think.
There you have it. That's what Alex Hollings thinks. All right, what are you writing about? When are we going to see it?
We've got all kinds of awesome stuff coming out this week. Unfortunately, couldn't tell you what it is because I just brought on 5 writers last week that I'm super excited about. We've got all kinds of really cool top-level policy stuff coming out. A couple of the writers that we just hired come from the Naval Office of Personnel Management, come from the Naval Policy and Strategy Offices. We've also got a new lean leader, a Six Sigma guy who's a Marine veteran who now works for GE Military Aviation, who's going to be doing content about how our defense apparatus is being affected by things like oil prices and stuff like that, which might sound boring until you realize that we invest billions of dollars into fuel for our various enterprises, whether it's military aviation or the Humvees that you see at a National Guard recruiting office. This costs a lot of money to maintain. So we're going to start having a lot more high-level policy stuff, but we're still going to have the same old primers, the same old, here's some great stuff that'll motivate you. And we're especially focused this month on Women's History Month. So we're going to have a lot of content oriented specifically towards female service members who have had a huge effect on our country that maybe haven't gotten the recognition that they really deserve.
There you have it. Alex Hollings here from sandbox.us, right?
Well, actually, sandboxnews.com is officially live. So you can come and find us on sandboxnews.com anytime that you want. Thanks for reminding me of that, Mac. And just so that you guys know, you're not going to see a whole lot of content from us about the coronavirus right now.
Because why not?
To be totally fair to Mac's position here, we don't know more than we do right now, right? So I think that a lot of the media stories out there are trading on the idea that you're scared and you're going to click on this article thinking that maybe it'll have that tidbit that you haven't seen yet. As soon as there are tidbits that are really worth people seeing, we're going to publish them. But until then, when it comes to all of the media sensationalism tied to this issue, I think it's better off that we keep our focus on the service member. And maybe after a little while, if this grows and becomes a bigger issue, we'll publish some more content talking about what you can be doing. But we do have 2 pieces about the coronavirus right now up on Sandbox News. One from January, I want to say, that's telling us what the Pentagon advises you to do to avoid infection. Right. And another one from last week that's talking about all of the ways the Pentagon has already enacted to try to prevent the spread of this among our service members. And honestly, Thus far, they're doing a pretty bang-up job. I'm really impressed with the way our defense apparatus has responded to this issue. So if you do want coronavirus news, we've got a couple of stories on there that you can read. But for the most part, what you're going to be getting from us is the same stuff as always until something's actually worth reporting when it comes to this whole coronavirus thing.
I think you should start a kind of a coronavirus fact update, kind of a dynamic blog piece that you have on your news page that say, hey, look,
that's a great idea, Mac.
We're about the facts and all this, and these are the things we want. These are the things we want you to know. And when, as you just said, which is I think is the grown up position, and that is, look, as we find out more, we will certainly make it available to you. But because I will tell you what I think, what people really want is they're looking for that, which is, where do I go to get the truth, and without all the the narrative that goes with it? Where do I go
these are the best
practices that we know of to date, and this is how you can get them, and these are things you should look for, you know, blah 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 blah, and these
which
are
include
things,
washing your damn hands, everybody. Just wash your hands,
but you got to wash them right, man.
Yeah, that's true. But I want to point something out to the listeners, because Mac and I have had plenty of debates about crazy stuff.
Not like this one, though.
That's fair. But I think that this is really important that people recognize that, like, debate like this matters. You know, nobody has to be wrong for a debate like this to matter.
Yes, they do.
You know, and the reason why Mac and I are able to argue about stuff like this, I really do think, is because we respect one another's position. And ability to establish an informed position. Like, it's good to argue with your friends. It's good to argue with your neighbors about stuff like this. As long as you remember, don't take it personally. You know,
well,
debate is good. Fighting is bad.
The thing that I've always built my shows around is that, you know, articulate, right, respectful, even heated, right, debate is a good thing, right? Is a good thing.
It
the
really
problem,
is. It's how we.
The problem in this country is that these debates that you that we've had the last hour then turn, you know, disrespectful and ugly, and because let me tell you, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I understand your frustration, right? My perspective in my life, though, is as a decision maker. What did they know? When did they know it? And to me, your point is, if people knew these things and didn't do the right things, then they should absolutely be tattooed for it. Absolutely. I agree. And I agree with that 1,000%.
I think that we really are, like, as is the case with most things, we're not on opposite sides of a spectrum. We're arguing from different parts of the pie slice in that same 45-degree radius, you know? And, but I think that's why – that's why debate matters, right? Because you and I can argue about this stuff, and maybe you made a couple of points or I made a couple of points that will resonate with one another. But also, really importantly, when people are listening, they might hear a point that I make and a point that you make and think both of those were valid, right? And it'll help them establish their own position that might not even be the same as yours or mine, right? But that's worthwhile. That's important. It's important that we can debate with each other and we can sleep on it. And we can go, hey, you know what? Mac had a good point when he said blank. Or, you know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, nothing's black and white. Everything is shades of gray. And when you have intelligent people with the best of intentions arguing different positions, the only thing you get out of that is benefit. As long as you can keep it from hurting anybody's feelings, basically. Yeah. Don't shy away from debate. Don't shy away from discussion. Be
no,
engaged.
And I'll tell you
be
what,
it's what our country
doesn't do anymore. Right?
You're right. You're totally right. And I would argue this is my political perspective, but I really do think that our country has always benefited from compromise. I think our country has always benefited from taking two different groups with very dissimilar positions and finding a common ground between them. Because I think most of the things that we do as a country are balancing acts. You have to balance between freedom and fascism. You have to balance between socialism and social reform. A lot of these things are balancing acts that you can really only find that balance through debate. Right.
No, and the balancing act, you have to balance it, right, between the House and the Senate. The Electoral College is the balancing act, the beautiful balancing act. In this country, the entire system is designed to force compromise. The entire system. And the Electoral College is that which was given to the least populated states in order to form the union, saying, look, we will have this calculation so that Charleston, so that New York City, so that Boston, those cities cannot run the nation, right? That your interest as rural, you know, less populated, but no less important states matter. And this is how we're going to do this constant system of checks and balances. And so
that was a really eloquent argument in favor of the Electoral College, that you should like isolate and just publish everywhere so that people will stop saying we should do away with the Electoral College.
Well, they don't.
What a foolish and short-sighted position.
Well, they don't.
People have.
They don't understand American history. They don't understand bicameral legislation if they don't understand the Electoral College. And it's this whole beautiful thing, and that is the lament of, right? And now, I mean, it could be conservatives if they populated big cities, but it tends to be liberals who dominate big cities and politically. And so, I mean, of course, they would go there like, we need to do away with that because then we could have won these elections, right? Well, that's not that's not the way the government works. And so,
not only that, but I like we've talked about this before. I think that there's a bigger difference between rural and urban Americans than there are between Democrats and Republicans.
Absolutely.
So the party lines tend to fall between rural and urban Americans. But I understand that it's because the experiences that you amass in your life living in a city are very different than the ones you amass living in the country. But as Americans, we tend to be pretty selfish, which is important. That's the basis of capitalism, right? But because we tend to be pretty selfish, we want what works for us to be forced upon everywhere else. And that's not a real good plan. You know, this is why I think that if you are a strong believer in more gun legislation, you should pursue it in your local state governments. If you're a strong believer in expanding 2A rights, you should pursue that in your state governments. We should stop looking at everything as it's a problem that can only be solved on the national level and start looking at things like, hey, let's work with our neighbors and find the common ground that we can actually live on, you know, and I think as a country, we're way too focused, you and I included, but as a country, we're way too focused on the one guy in the White House instead of the hundreds of people, thousands of people in the system that have a direct effect on how our life actually goes, right? So I would argue to everybody, number one, follow Max and my example in arguing with your friends. But number two, make sure some of those people you're arguing with are local to you, you know? See what you can do to change things right there at home. If you're worried about the coronavirus, find out what you can do to help your community or your family get ready. If you're worried about whatever else it may be, find out what you can do to help your community and your family get ready for that. Let's worry less about what Donald Trump is doing and more about what our congressmen, our senators, our governors are doing. And I think that before you know it, a lot of shit will be a lot better.
I hope so, but it doesn't seem like we get that far.
On the bright side, there's going to be a lot of openings in the Senate and Congress if everybody above the age of 80 gets killed by the coronavirus.
Wow.
So
we'll have there you go. On that note, goodbye. Thanks, Alex.
Hey, always a pleasure, Mac. Talk to you soon.
There you have it. Alex Hollings here on a Monday. Here's my point in all this is, what could possibly be the motivation of anybody that would delay a response to something that they know is, puts American lives, and this falls directly, right, on me and my shoulders and my department's shoulders. And so, you know, to me, I wouldn't be afraid to say that they got it wrong. I mean, I tend not to be afraid, but I think you can only do that after you make some deduction in terms of what did they know, when did they know it. So, I think Alex's point about, did we react too slow? I don't know that you can write that yet. I understand the sentiment. I don't know that you can write that yet. Right. But the other thing, and since I'm a Chinese hater, right, the other thing I think is that Chinese certainly didn't help anybody by understating the impact of this thing and where it was going within China. So, and evidently they continue to do that. You know, you see pictures of, you know, parts of cities walled off now. And yet you don't read too much about it. What you read about is the heroic, you know, President Xi fighting this, this, you know, viral outbreak around the world and how China is doing such a great thing. So anyway, thanks for listening to this on a Monday. Tomorrow you're going to hear from James Moran. He runs an organization called Bar X, and they do weekends for veterans. And hopefully Post-Traumatic Winning is going to do some work with them. But theirs is a little bit different than Lot in that you go with a battle buddy. Yeah, how cool is that? So I mean, it's not like you're there with a bunch of strangers that you meet, and then over the course of the weekend you get to know and you hang out. It's from the time you get there, you're there with people that you know, your best battle buddies you go with. So it's a pretty cool concept. And so hopefully that and Post-Traumatic Winning are going to partner up here and change some lives. So that tomorrow. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up right now here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. So on a Monday, over and out.